All right, and we are all ready to go.
All right. Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the CCSD board meeting for Thursday, October 14th. And we are opening with the call to order. And Osana, would you provide the flag for us, please, for the pledge? Thank you. Will you join me, please, in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And moving on to establishment of quorum, we have all directors present and available to us. For the president's report today, I do not have anything for today's board meeting, but in moving on to agenda review item E, what I'm going to request is that we, to accommodate a presenter available to us who only has a short period of time, that we move agenda item 6A, which is the update regarding the California Voting Rights and Act report by National Demographics Corporation forward. And we do that at this time, unless there's any opposition or if anyone has any concerns about doing that, and I'm not seeing anything. So Mr. Weigold, with that in mind, would you please introduce agenda item 6A for us?
Yes, President Steidel, agenda. Number 6A is an update regarding the California Voting Rights Act report by the National Demographics Corporation. It's recommended that the Board of Directors receive a report and presentation regarding the California Voting Rights Act and district-based elections in the Cambria Community Services District, completed by National Demographics Corporation and including a demographic study and election review. Background in this is that at the April 15th meeting, the board considered the issue of California voting rights and approved an agreement with National Demographics to prepare a report analyzing the district-based elections in the Cambria Community Services District to better inform the board and the community regarding this issue. So with that as background, I'd like to introduce Doug Johnson. He's the president for National Demographics. We've also attached his report as an attachment to this agenda item.
All right.
Any other questions? Turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Jim Michael. I appreciate it. Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm glad that you had the opportunity to do that. And I believe you have a report for us, please.
Yes, thank you. And it's good to be with you. I appreciate you accommodating our somewhat jammed up schedules right now. Well, then I'm joined by Dr. Daniel Phillips, who also works with NDC and is becoming Mr. Central Coast. He's handling districting and redistricting projects for all kinds of jurisdictions all over the Central Coast. So I'm going to jump in to the presentation here. So first slide. So, you know, as you know, we're talking about how the board is elected. So in California, there's really three systems of elections. You can be at large, the way the board is currently elected, where anyone runs and the top two or top three candidates get elected in any given year. And all the voters vote every election cycle for their top two or top three preferred candidates. And that's still the norm in most jurisdictions, although there's been a big shift recently. There are a very few jurisdictions that use what's called from district or sometimes residence districts, where you have to live in a given district or in your case, a division. And the election is still held jurisdiction wide. That was a very rare system to begin with. And it's become even more rare because under the California Voting Rights Act, that type of system is just as vulnerable as a regular at-large system. It doesn't provide any protection. So the only way to be safe kind of in what they call the safe harbor from a potential California Voting Rights Act challenge is to be by district or by division for special districts. And that's where a board member has to live in the division they want to represent, and only the voters in that division vote on that election. And this is all coming about, as you know, because of the California Voting Rights Act, which was written to very aggressively encourage bi-district elections. The way that the law does that is that it takes the Federal Voting Rights Act, which has been in effect since 1965, and we have a pretty solid understanding of. And under the federal law, there are four tests that a jurisdiction has to fail. And you have to fail all four before you have to go to district elections. So the protected class, that means Latinos, African-Americans, Asian-Americans, or Native Americans, the protected class has to be a majority of a district. And then there are statistical tests that we look at to measure voting cohesion among different ethnic groups in a given jurisdiction. And you have to show that the protected class is voting cohesively and their preferred candidates lose. And then under the federal law, there's the fourth test, that do the totality of circumstances indicate race is a factor in these elections? So that's the federal law. It's a fairly high bar for plaintiffs to cross. What California did is it struck the first and fourth. So it opened up the door to voting rights challenges on behalf of much smaller geographic concentrations by not requiring a majority. And it took out the totality of circumstances issue. Now all the plaintiff has to show is that there is a statistical correlation. No need to show cause or actual relationship, simply a correlation between how one protected class votes and whether or not their apparently preferred candidates are elected. There's no need to show any kind of discrimination or prejudice, and all the jurisdictions switching are not reflecting that they had any discrimination, prejudice, or anything else going on. It's simply this statistical test of correlation that forces jurisdictions into bi-division elections. And so what we've seen is what we've called a quiet tsunami sweeping the state. These numbers are even a little out of date now, but when we compiled these, it was about 215 school districts, 34 community college districts, 126 cities. After the latest wave, we're up to about 140 cities. Only one county board of supervisors, because there was only one left that wasn't by district. So now all 58 counties elect by district. And now as you just certainly heard, we're seeing more and more special districts getting these challenges. What's really driving the tsunami is not, as I mentioned, that all these hundreds of jurisdictions are violating anyone's rights in any way. What's driving it on such a large scale is the financial expense. So you can see on the right, you know, the settlements and decisions have awarded hundreds of thousands and in some cases millions of dollars in legal fees to the plaintiff's attorneys that bring these cases. And right now, as you may have heard, Santa Monica is awaiting its hearing at the state Supreme Court on its case, where they've fought it all the way up to the state Supreme Court. They've spent somewhere between $6 and $10 million on their own defense. And we don't have any figures from the plaintiff's side yet, other than just the initial trial. And the plaintiffs are asking for $22 million in fees from that trial. So it's an extreme example, but that's what's driving this overwhelming tsunami across the state of change. So it boils down to demographics in the end. So looking at the numbers, when I prepared this, I didn't have the official numbers, but they're pretty close to that estimated number. And really what we're focused on is the citizen voting age percentage numbers, because the courts look at that as your eligible voters. And so, you know, no surprise, you're all aware of this, that roughly 13%, maybe a little less than 1 in 6 eligible voters in the district are Hispanic or Latino. And the rest are overwhelmingly white. We do provide a whole bunch of data. I'm not going to go through all this, but in addition to the analysis of liability and do you need to make the change, which is largely almost entirely based on racial numbers, when you actually draw lines, then those lines get much more into neighborhoods and communities of interest. And so that's where data on age and language spoken at home and education levels and renters versus homeowners, all that information can come into play if you do decide to go to drawing election division lines. So we provide all that for every map. Looking at it graphically, this is what we call a heat map, where the and it's showing the Latino percentage of citizen voting age population. So the Latino share of the eligible voters. And you can see the purples and blues are the lowest percentages. And then the green, the couple of green census blocks and I think three or four red census blocks are where Latinos are actually a majority of the eligible voters in that city block or equivalent census block area. So, you know, some of these areas obviously have small numbers, but you get a couple, clearly a more concentration over in the eastern part of the district than kind of the southeastern part, I guess, than in other parts of the district. And then Asian Americans, we don't really get any geographic concentration of them. There are a couple of census blocks that have slightly higher numbers, but nothing that would show up as influencing the demographics of an election division. Especially in small jurisdictions like this one, a lot of the focus ends up being just on who's been elected in the past. You know, it's really hard in a small jurisdiction to generate enough data to be usable for a polarized voting analysis on a statistical basis. But that doesn't mean that the plaintiffs can't still bring a case. And here, you know, as in so many special districts of all sizes, there just often aren't contested elections. You know, there's only been two contested elections that we could find in recent history, and there were no Latino, Asian American, or African American candidates in either of those elections. So it's tough to draw any conclusions. The challenge is that the interpretation of this law has been so favorable to the plaintiff side that we don't have a decision. Plaintiffs have been allowed to claim that, well, there's no Latinos running, for example, because the at-large system is intimidating to them or is biased against them, so they don't run. Now, there's never been a decision based on that, but it is the claim that gets them in the door. So that's where the vulnerability comes, even though we don't have any actual elections that we can actually statistically analyze where a Latino or other protected class candidate ran in recent history. We have looked at the numbers and possibilities in terms of test maps. They're, you know, anytime we're drawing maps in a very small jurisdiction, they tend to look ugly on a map simply because we have to balance populations, and with weird-looking census blocks really get highlighted in a small jurisdiction. But as a summary of what we've got so far, and then I can go on to the maps if you want to, if there's questions about them. As I mentioned, Latinos are about 20% of the total population, just over 13% of the eligible voters, but none have run in the two elections that have been held since 2010. And we did look kind of almost an illegally racially gerrymandered maximum Latino seat would only reach 32%. So there's no chance of drawing a majority Latino seat here in the division. Reasonably drawn seats could get to maybe 24 and 16% Latino by citizen voting age population, slightly above where they are at large. So that might be why there might be a challenge brought, but again, nowhere near 50%. And that, of course, would lead to issues with pairing current directors. And so we'd, you know, in every small jurisdiction, we always are concerned about that. It is possible to draw a map. It's not very pretty, but it certainly would meet the legal requirements of a map for a special district where each director would be in a separate seat. And it's important to emphasize that all we're doing in drawing each director in a separate seat is allowing everyone to run for re-election. It's not, people often jump right to like congressional gerrymandering where members of Congress pick their friends and their supporters to be in their district. That's not what we're talking about. That doesn't come into play here at all. All we're simply looking at with the directors is, can each one run for re-election so that the voters get to decide whether someone has earned re-election. And so we can do that and get a 28% Latino CVAP seat. So a bit higher than the current district-wide percentage, but again, nowhere near a majority Latino seat. So this is the interesting challenge of, we're seeing a lot of these challenges where it's not a traditional voting rights challenge. This isn't a place where, you know, I'd expect the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund or the ACLU to come in, but we are seeing these private attorneys showing up using the CVRA as a tool to try to encourage bi-district elections, and then bringing lawsuits if it isn't done. So that's my main presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions and to go into any detail that would be useful.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. I do have one question before we move on, because we do need to pay public comment in this regard also. And that has to do on the page 11, when you were talking about election history and referred to two elections having been held. We've actually had four elections during that time period.
Since 2010?
Oh, since 2010, that's even more. Yes, because we have elections every, you know, on a rotating basis every 2 years.
Contested. So I don't believe. From the records we got from the state, they didn't have any contested elections.
Huh.
Have you had more that had opposition candidates run?
Let's see. I saw a hand first from you, Vice President Howe.
I think absolutely every one of our biannual elections has had more candidates than seats.
Yeah, they've been contested.
Oh. We've only had one that wasn't, and that was just for a 2 year completion of a position that had been, you know, had been left, and there was just a 2 year period left for it. But all of the rest are contested.
Oh, okay. We'll follow up on that. We get our election data from a state database that says that it collects it all from all the county registrars, but we can go back and check those one by one with the registrar.
Okay, I would appreciate an update of the report to reflect that information too, to see if there's anything additionally that needs to be addressed in that way.
Mm-hmm. Sure, definitely will.
You can bring that back to us, please. Director Gray?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Johnson, for that presentation. I had the same question that President Seidel did, but I would note in the contested elections, I don't believe there's been a Hispanic candidate in any of those. We'll find out, you know, obviously when we go back to the record, I think the point remains that there has not been any evidence of racially polarized voting or whatever from that. But my question is about the base, you know, sort of these simple sort of preliminary numbers about what kind of districts you can make and how you can make a somewhat higher minority level district. Is there some track record of districts or cities that have successfully won cases? And if there is, what does their district layout look like? In other words, what are we in? Are we in the range of jurisdictions that have succeeded in not having to go to districts, basically?
Oh. Yeah, a very good question. I normally mention that and I skipped over it, but no, so no jurisdiction has ever defeated a CVRA challenge. It's part of the challenge we have on this is we don't know exactly where that bar is because it's never been set. All of the cases brought so far have been settled in favor of the plaintiffs. So,
Director Farmer, I know that you have a question also, and after that, what we will do is move it to public comment because that was my intent. So. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Steidel, and thank you, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Phillips for being here. So I just want to make a brief comment. Back in 2016, we had seven people running for three seats, just to let you know about contested elections. With regard to the size of the communities, because you showed us that list of the various cities that have been sued and what the results were, we're only 6,000 people. And obviously, as you pointed out, a large majority being Caucasian. What is the potential of a community of this size and such a wide, you know, a wide percentage being just one portion of, you know, of a population? what is the potential for a town of, like I said, of this size and the basic demographic of being taken to court?
So, unfortunately, there's no provision under the law protecting small jurisdictions, as logical as that would be. There actually is an obscure provision that says it does protect small jurisdictions, but it defines small as less than 100 registered voters. So it doesn't really protect anybody.
Really small.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't seen much in the way of actual court cases against the smallest jurisdictions, mainly because, you know, the cost of defense is the same for everybody, regardless of your size. And so the small jurisdictions historically have not been able to risk it. You know, the thought of Santa Monica might be able to spend $6 million defending itself, but a small jurisdiction, you can't even really, in most cases, comprehend spending $2 million to defend itself. Mm-hmm. And we have had a whole bunch of jurisdictions we've worked in. You know, did Big Bear Lake, which is the city of Big Bear Lake, which is almost exactly 6,000 people. Dr. Phillips, who are you working with right now? Just some samples.
Locally, I'm working with the Coast Unified School District, so just a little bit bigger, and also Keene City, very small city, Solvang, Buellton, so pretty small towns.
Yeah, Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande.
Cayucas as well, I believe, Daniel. Isn't that true?
Yes, the Cayucas Elementary School District, mm-hmm. and their sanitary district as well.
Yeah. Yeah, there's often been talk of this law really should have a floor. You know, we talk about King City and I forget the councilman's last name, but I call him Landslide because he wanted to retire and nobody filed to run for his seat. And even when the filing period was extended, no one filed. So they went back to him and he promised his wife he'd retire, but she finally relented and let him run. So he ran as a write-in. And the incumbent councilman was reelected by 6 votes. We joke, probably not his wife's vote, but in small jurisdictions, it's obviously a big concern, but the law does not take that into consideration.
All right. What I would like to do then is move to public comment in this regard, please. And the first, let's say, Osana, would you please bring any attendees who wish to speak?
Yes, President Seidel. Elizabeth Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I'm always intrigued with seeing Mr. Phillips again, since I participated in the school district meetings on this. But I have a pertinent question to CCSD. Since there is no plaintiff against CCSD, no charges of any sort have been brought, Mr. Johnson, do you find any correlation, not causation, but correlation, between the decisions to go district rather than at large in relationship to whether or not there's an actual plaintiff against a district, against a community services district? I'm just wondering here, it seems like there's something going on in terms of a pattern, but I'm not astute enough as you two, Mr. Phillips and Mr. Johnson are, to see whether or not there's something happening in California leading to the choice of election districts over the at-large model. And I'd like a response with regard to correlation, please. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, we normally, in the normal order of business, public comment is just that, rather than questions having to be addressed. But I will say that in this particular circumstance, I think that I would, where possible, if you are in a position to address the question that's being asked, there won't be a conversation or an exchange back and forth, but just on the point itself, if you could address that, please.
Sure, happy to. We don't have any mathematical studies or anything like that. What really tends to happen is one of two things. if I take a step back, what happens when someone sends a letter is they demand that you make the shift. And if the jurisdiction makes a shift, the attorney sending that letter can bill you up to $32,000 right now for sending that letter. If the jurisdiction doesn't make the shift in the set time frame under the law, then they can file a lawsuit, and then you're instantly into hundreds of thousands of dollars at best case. So we get a couple things going on. One is jurisdictions that get those demand letters and then pay the $32,000 and make the shift because of the threat. The other is jurisdictions that kind of look around and see that everyone around them is getting the letters and decide to get ahead of the curve to save the $32,000 risk and to be able to control the process on their own timeline as well. And so those tend to be the factors driving local jurisdictions is either you get a letter, which, to be honest, the letters from MALDEF and ACLU and the traditional voting rights groups are very clear situations. We can easily predict those. Like I said, your demographics do not match any case that I'm aware of them bringing. But the individual kind of private attorneys are much more aggressive and harder to predict. So they tend to go region by region. And they tend to get attracted. And usually they send a letter before they even have a plaintiff. So they send it on behalf of an organization. And that organization claims members in the jurisdiction. Obviously, to get to court, they would then need an individual plaintiff. But calling them on whether or not they have an actual plaintiff is a six-figure bluff or a six-figure risk. So few small jurisdictions take that. So I don't have any formulas or calculations of how many jurisdictions have done it before or after they got a letter, or even before or after the plaintiff was identified. But it is a very common thing to do, either because a letter was received, or all, as is happening right now in the Central Coast, just about every jurisdiction on the coast is getting a letter. So the others are trying to get ahead of that in many cases.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate that. I guess a question comes to mind for me in your having explained that. Of course, this probably hasn't been in place long enough to have this kind of circumstance happen, but is there ever an occasion where, for instance, a demand letter comes, the $32,000 is paid to the lawyer because that's what they were looking for in the first place, and then the redistricting happens, and they find after redistricting that it's not bringing forward anyone who makes application to run for the district. I mean, what are your what are your druthers in that? I mean, if you make the attempt, then you establish the districts at large, but you're not getting people who want to participate. Is there any way to address that?
No, not really. The law doesn't make any provision for that. As I mentioned, this law was entirely written for much larger jurisdictions. They didn't really anticipate its impact at the small jurisdiction level. And efforts to take such considerations into account over the years have been just completely shut down. So it is obviously a challenge. If no one runs, you have your usual vacancy process of an appointment or a special election. But the appointment or special election also is limited to people in that election division.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Do any other directors have questions? Vice President Howell?
Two. First, I'll address them separately. If we were to go forward and form districts, is it still possible that we could be challenged in that the districts were not correctly formed? In other words, does it get us out of the woods just simply to have districts, or are there some other considerations that we're going to have to be making if we do this?
Well, there are provisions in the California Voting Rights Act, mainly about election sequencing and which seats come up in which years. It doesn't have any provisions about how the lines get drawn. So the legal guidelines on where you draw the lines actually come from the federal law. So we have to follow the Federal Voting Rights Act. But as noted, you don't have any protected class populations large enough to bring a Federal Voting Rights Act challenge. There's still a provision under the Federal Voting Rights Act that lets protected class bring a challenge for intentional discrimination. So a jurisdiction that said, you know, well, this is our Latino neighborhood, let's divide it up to make sure none of them win. That could obviously be challenged regardless of numbers. But you're, as a special district, you're pretty flexible. Cities and counties have much more extensive state laws governing how they draw their lines. But those rules at this time don't apply to special districts. And in reality, in a jurisdiction your size, you know, simply finding a way to get the populations balanced using these kind of very rough population blocks that are census blocks is a very difficult challenge in itself.
I have one more question also is in the data that you were providing, particularly on page six, where you were talking about total population, showing it by group, and then citizen voting age population. But citizen voting age population and the percentages derived aren't based on registered voters.
Correct. Those numbers come from the American Community Survey, which is a giant national survey done by the Census Bureau, but it is a survey.
So is that ever considered as part of the evaluation process? Because there's always the potential that some percentage there would be significantly affected, particularly when you're dealing with hundreds of people against total populations of thousands for the actual registered voters. So is there any reference point that's been used for that before?
Sort of. The city of Poway did not fight going to districts, but a resident challenged the city's decision to go to districts. And the resident did it. So when the city shifted, the city was almost the same as you. I think it was 13% Latino citywide. The most Latino district that they could draw was 16%. So there really wasn't a change. And that's actually within the margin of error of the data. So they went from 13% citywide to, you know, improving their opportunity to elect by going up to 16% in one district. Again, the city didn't fight on that basis. So we didn't have a real case. A resident, actually the former mayor, filed a federal case saying that was too much consideration of race. You know, this didn't do any significant increase. Unfortunately, we didn't get a ruling on that either way. It would have been nice to get guidance, but the case was tossed out on a standing issue. So the question comes up, you know, well, going to districts, does it actually help? It's an open question. The law actually has a provision in it saying if it simply improves the influence, the ability of that group to influence the election, that's sufficient basis. So that's why these claims get brought in jurisdictions with numbers like yours.
Okay. Director Gray.
Yeah, a couple more questions, just short ones. If we have to go to districts and the map to, you know, the appropriate map for a concentrated district, Hispanic district leaves two or more directors in a single district. What happens to the incumbents? Do they serve out their terms or what?
You're exactly right. It only impacts the current board at the time of when your current term ends. Mm-hmm. So going to election districts has no impact on your current terms at all. You remain an at-large board member for the rest of your current term. And it's only when it's time to run again.
And just to follow up on Vice President Howell's question, it sounds to me like there's no real referee to judge the adequacy of the districts, you know, the new district map, is there? It's simply a matter of lawsuits and civil action, right? There's no, like, you know, attorney general getting involved or anything like that, right?
Right. Yeah, the California law simply judges you based on whether or not you have elections or have by-district elections. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have them, you're safe. If you don't, there are a couple of kind of exotic election systems that charter cities might use. But for a special district, mm-hmm, and a general law city or any general law jurisdiction, it's simply, do you have districts or not? Okay. It's not, there's no question of, do those improve the actual end results?
Okay.
Director Dean.
Hi. Looking at these maps and listening to this discussion, it sounds like what is trying to be done here is to give the protected class their as much of their own district as possible to increase their chances of having someone elected. But I watched the webinar on how the state does their districting. And then at a recent NCAC meeting, the county went through how they did their districting. And my impression, and I may be wrong, but my impression from watching both of these is the way that they do it is they try to balance the population so it's an equal number of people as much as possible in each district. And then whatever percentage of the protected class there is in total population, 1/5 of that protected class has to be in each district. Is that not the case here? It looks like these maps that are being drawn are trying to put as much of the protected class in a single district as possible.
Yes, the latter option is what the Federal Voting Rights Act actually dictates, that you try to put there's a key clause there that the protected class residents have to be geographically compact. You can't go stretching from one part of the county to another just because of race. But if there is a neighborhood that, you know, or a couple of nearby neighborhoods that are heavily populated by the protected class, those do need to be put together into one seat to enhance their ability to elect.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. No additional questions from any of the directors? All right, what I will do just is to touch base with Mr. Carmel to see, Mr. Carmel, if there's anything else in observation or comment that you would like to make.
No, I thought it was a pretty comprehensive presentation, and I think the board now has a pretty good understanding of what we're talking about.
Okay, fine. Mr. Johnson, I would appreciate being able to have any possible updated information relative to the other elections that happened. And I guess the only other point of reference that I will make is that, as in most things, percentages as statistics don't necessarily provide a specific grasp of the information they represent, because the numbers that actually are represented in those percentages, of course, become much more truncated than the overall number or summary that may be being looked at. So that's something to be aware of or keep in mind for all of us, but we've certainly been provided the information that we need to understand the process. And I really appreciate both you and Mr. Phillips having joined us today to be able to provide some explanations and insights into some of the things that were happening, and look forward to hearing back from you on the other information we discussed. One more time, anything else from anyone? All right. Oh, Mr. Vice President Howell.
Oh, thank you. I don't want to take too much more time, but I'm still having a little problem. I don't think, Mr. Johnson, that I may not have been paying attention, but I'm having a little trouble evaluating the three maps that you've given us here. And I don't recall you're discussing them specifically, but rather in more general terms. So if we do have a little time, would it be possible to bring up those maps and to just talk about them while we're looking at them? Because I really am having a problem. I do not know how to evaluate this.
Yeah. So the key thing with those, they're really just tests. So they're not at all proposals for adoption or anything like that. We're not paying attention to the neighborhoods. We're just, as President Stridell was mentioning, we're only looking at the numbers when we do these test maps. So they're purely a look at, you know, a maximum seat, as I mentioned, trying to look at that 50% test under the federal law and see, you know, if we drew the craziest possible division, how high a percentage could we get? And you just see, kind of doing exactly what I was just saying you can't do, which is stretching from every block that gets above 20% Latino across the whole district, we can string them together and make a 32%. So there's really, we're just testing, can we get to 50%? And that's really just testing that and saying no. And in that case, we didn't draw the other districts because in that case, we're only caring about the one seat.
I see.
The other tests, just where we fill in, kind of smooth that out a little bit and fill it in. The attorney who sends the majority of these letters actually refers in his letter to, you should switch because if I have to sue you, it'll be like Palmdale. And in Palmdale, I got the judge to put in a map that where he intentionally put four of the five council members in one seat. So, you know, I'm not, you know, projecting anything onto him. He actually says this in the letters when he sends them. So just kind of a worst case scenario, if you were to fight and that attorney were to get his, you know, his usual approach, how much disruption could that bring to the board and what types of seats would it get? And that's where we're looking at, you know, a 24% Latino seat is probably reasonable, or as reasonable as you can get. And given his stated other objectives of just, you know, essentially punishing the district for fighting him, all five board members would end up in two seats. So that's what we're looking at there. And then the last one is just looking at, you know, is there any possible way to draw lines that would have each board member have the ability to run for re-election and essentially let all the re-election decisions be up to the voters, rather than lines dictating them. And all we're showing in that last test is it's possible. It's not pretty. I would note that any map in such a small jurisdiction is not going to be kind of perfect squares because it just isn't possible with the population requirements. Yeah, but it's possible, but it's contrived. So does that, and again, none of these are proposed. The reason I didn't walk through them is they're not proposals for the board to consider adopting. They're just tests. To let you know what you're going
to. In terms of understanding, I get that because we're not just really dealing with communities of interest or anything like that. Let me ask a couple of very briefly. So on your plaintiff test map, what am I to understand that the district you labeled as one contains 1/5 of our population? Is that true?
Yes. So all of them are population balanced. Yes.
So all of these are okay. And then the other one I have is, it's just a question on your no pair test. You say both division 2 and 3 would be 13% Latino, but then you say it is not compact. And yet when I look at them, they look, well, how is it that they are not, what is not compact?
Sure. Well, one kind of has the fingers pointing out in 2 or 3 different ways, and one of those fingers points right into 3. So 3 is not too bad, but they're not going to go into any books for redistricting reform. That's for sure.
So it would be, again, just so I can understand. So the ones that are not compact would be 1 and 2 on that one.
Definitely. And 4 is kind of a rectangle, but has very weird edges kind of thing, just because of the way it's following the city's blocks, and the city blocks are weird shaped in there.
I think I got a clearer idea, but as you said, these are only one, we have to consider compactness, community of interest, and ethnic makeup. If we were to go forth with this.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Howe. That was actually an excellent summary to be able to walk away with. Thank you. All right. I do not see any more questions coming forward. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Phillips, I appreciate very much you setting aside the time today and aligning to our schedule needs to be able to talk to us and bring the information to us. So appreciate this, and we'll certainly take it under consideration. Thank you. And not to infer that we're having a vote today, because the only thing that we're doing actually is just accepting the report. So consideration may have been the wrong word there, but yes, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll definitely get you an updated report with those additional election numbers.
It's appreciated. Thank you both. All right. So what we will do then is move back to our regular agenda format. And as soon as I can retrieve mine from its residence on the floor next to me because it got pushed off the table, we will move on to board member communications. Are there any board members who have communications that they wanted to provide? All right, seeing none, then we'll move on to our commission reports and the pro-chairman's report. If Mr. Niffen, yes, Mr. Niffen, he's still there.
He's still here. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, certainly. Thank you. So Perfect. You're sitting, you're still on your way, still on your way up, huh?
I'm on a mission. There you go. Hey, I'll make it quick. Just the things that we were working on this month that were of interest is the working on the master plan and working with the consultant and getting that going. I just wanted the board to know that we're ready to go. We kind of feel that the ball is in your guys' court. You got to hire that guy, figure out who he is, but we're happy to work with him. And because we do see that there's some issues with the master plan in regards to the pro's responsibility and what we can be doing basically better than what we're already doing. So we want to let you know we're on board with that. The other thing we did is we want the board, and I think we're going to work on this on the next agenda next week, is the ex officio member for the skate park, one of their board members being an ex officio on our board, so we can help with communication and facilitating that project better. We're very, very excited that Mr. D'Enzo is the project manager on the skate park, and we're hoping that this helps facilitate that, then moves up forward at a good clip. So that made everybody happy. Other than that, we've worked, the skate park has been working on some MOUs, trying to get some groups in town, the civic organizations, to help with the futures on the skate park and keeping upkeep on that. So that was a good sign. And other than that, working on the bathroom still. You're going to receive the bathroom project here later on in the agenda. I'm not sure I'm going to still be on the call with that, but that's all still pretty straightforward. And I'm sure Carlos will be able to answer any questions you might have in regards to that. Other than that, that's my report. Thank you.
Okay. One question for you, Mr. Niffen. In looking at the agenda package, I didn't notice what the recommendation or feedback was from PROS regarding the review, this final review of the bathroom design.
We just, in regards to that's the one that you voted on, and there we go. We're good to go on it.
Okay, so there wasn't anything additionally in your review during your meeting that...
No.
Okay.
No, we understand your guys' position and don't disagree with it. We picked the other one and you guys decided that was a prudent decision, and there we go. Yeah. There was the discussion on which way it should be faced, and little things like that, but no. I think it's good that we have that in our pocket and we can now move forward. I was thinking about that today, but yeah, we're going to be good there.
Okay, so I guess I was probably talking to some of the recommendations, and for instance, the one on the orientation of the bathrooms. So the only way that that can come back to the board is if that's communicated to us, because there was something of some, you know, specific information that was offered by one of your commissioners about the orientation on the bathroom and how it would be beneficial to do that.
Yeah, I thought that Monty had agreed that that was a good decision and that he was going to incorporate that into his plan. Did I miss that?
Okay, perhaps I missed that. We'll close the loop on that then.
Yeah, okay. But
and,
other than
and
that,
make sure that that's taken in as part of the consideration. Okay.
Yeah, I looked at the agenda package, but I did not look close enough to see what the orientation was that he gave you.
It was exactly the same thing. That went to
there's
pros.
Our man right there.
Can I cut in real quick?
You certainly may. You certainly may, Mr. Soto.
Yeah. So we did incorporate that comment into the final draft. So that's what you guys have currently.
Excellent. Okay. I missed that then. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for straightening.
I didn't pay attention. Thank you.
Okay, well, I wish you luck, Mr. Niffen, and whatever
your
choice is for the outcome today, and enjoy yourself.
Right on, thank you. Go Dodgers.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, they'll certainly have one very vocal fan there for them to name. Okay, moving on then from the... from the pros chairman's report, we'll move to public comment. And as usual, this is on any item of interest, which is not on the agenda day as part of its business. And each speaker has 3 minutes for their public comment. So Osana?
Yes, I have Tina Dickerson. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Osana. Good afternoon, board. This is a matter of public disclosure that I think the board had should have disclosed to the public and did not. So in early September, I learned of a situation that came about not disclosed to the public, where the general manager has apparently been allowed to go back 6,040 miles round trip to Yale to teach a weekly class, an undergraduate course. I wrote to the board on September 23rd and asked that this item be amended in the contract, because it was never made clear in his in the contract of June 2019, where because of the pre-existing commitment, he could teach through December 31st of 2019. That was it. And that was disclosed to the public in the contract and in board meetings. I sent my letter and I received this response from legal counsel, Mr. Carmel, and I'm going to read not all of it. I don't have enough time. He says, "We've reviewed your below email and respectfully must disagree with your assertions. First, no action was taken regarding approving Mr. Weigold's teaching assignment. The issue came up during a closed session related to reviewing his performance, and the board did not express problems with him doing so. However, no vote or action was taken on the matter. It was simply part of the discussion." He talks about the Brown Act and that I'm aware of it and blah, 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 but I'm not going to go on with that. And he does say, in addition, there is no need to amend Mr. Weigold's employment agreement to address his continued teaching at Yale. While it's true that the employment agreement expressly permitted him to finish out his previous teaching obligation, since he wanted that to be clear, I mean, I would hope so. The guy's just applying for a job, for heaven's sakes. It also concludes that his teaching was not an activity that conflicted materially or would interfere with his performance. I I have to really wonder how making a 6,000 plus trip every single week does not affect his position as general manager. How does it affect the morale of the staff, for example? How do they feel about him being able to just take off and leave? And how many days is he actually on the job? So this is something that the public should have been made aware of. And I do not believe that this comes under a performance evaluation of him being general manager of the CCSD. It has nothing to do with his position of teaching a capstone course at Yale. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Osana?
Yes, Christine Heinrichs, go ahead, please.
I'd like to thank Tina for her presentation, and I would ask the board to please discuss this issue. It's fine if Mr. Weigelt wants to be a part-time general manager, and if that works for the district, there's no problem, but he certainly should not be receiving a full-time salary for a part-time job. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. And Osana?
Yes, Dr. Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I certainly agree on the question of full and part-time. I used to be a university professor and know how much time is entailed in preparing and teaching a course. So I'm a little dubious about whether or not this can be fit into a full-time job as the general manager of this excellent district. But I'm sure you have all noticed what I want to talk about. In addition, you've all noticed the monarch butterflies. This year, they are becoming much more plentiful here in Cambria than they have been over the past few years. And I want, therefore, to ask you a question. I know you can't answer it today, but perhaps you can and suggest that somebody answer it next week. And what my question is this. In CambriaCA.org this morning, Kitty Connolly has an article about the monarchs, very helpful article, actually. And at the end of that article, she, the executive director of Fiscalini, says, quote, "Cambria Community Services District and Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve are working with the," I can never pronounce this, X-E-R-C-E-S, I can never remember, society, "to protect and enhance monarch habitat on the ranch by continuing to care for the forest on Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and by adapting our care for monarchs to local conditions, we play an important part in their recovery," end of quotation. Now, I've been a monarch butterfly fan for over half a century. We used to have them a lot back in South Dakota. But I want to ask, what does this mean? What is Cambria Community Services District doing specifically to help the monarchs? And who's paying for it? Out of what fund? I'm very interested in this. And I hope that next week at your meeting, you will be able to provide us, the public and the monarchs, I assume, with information about this. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, go to San Simeon Cove, because I hear that the monarchs are back on the eucalyptus trees, where when I visited here 40 years ago, you could not see any of the tree. You could only see monarch butterflies covering the whole spectrum of trees there. So do yourself a favor after this meeting, maybe or whenever, and go check out those monarchs up there in San Simeon. It's phenomenally good news, we hope, for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Are there any other attendees who wish to make public comment, Osana?
I don't see any hands raised, but I have two written comments.
All right.
Okay. From Lauren Younger, water and light is the subject, Brambles renovation. What is the CCSD's response to the amount of water that will be used when Dirk Winters has finished his renovation of the Brambles restaurant into a hotel and spa? You know, it's going to take a lot of water to run that place. After years of no water usage at this site, we are facing massive usage of a communal resource. Even if you charge him more for such usage, that does not make more water. And then rodeo grounds restroom. If a light is going to be placed on the outside of the new restroom being built on the rodeo grounds, it needs to shine only down. If not, it will travel into the hill above the rodeo grounds where owls and other critters live, forcing them to leave to hunt where dark still exists. Lauren Younger.
And thank you, Ms. Younger.
I have another comment by Karen Wilson to be read aloud regarding HIP camp. We and over 100 other residents in our area are totally against having HIP camp coming to Cambria. It is a severe fire threat whether HIP camp decides to have campfires or not. How are they going to control smokers who start many fires? Who is going to pay for all the homeowners' fire insurance when we all get canceled when our insurance carriers find out we live next to a campground? HIP camp, which is buying up private property here, could start the big fire that takes out Cambria. Please support our cause with the SLO County Government, the North Coast Advisory Council, and the Coastal Commission. Thank you, Karen and Dave Pearson. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe also there was another written comment that Dr. Bettenhausen had provided, although it was at mid-morning today. And it wasn't on the subject that she spoke to today. So rather than read it, as long as we incorporate it as part of the agenda package, that will be fine.
Yeah, I think it said 7B. Agenda item 7B.
Oh, okay. On the assumption that she would be available when it is then. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it, Osana.
Thank you.
All right. That appears to be the public comment then. So we'll move forward to item 5, which is the consent agenda. Is there any desire by any director to pull this from consent? Okay, not seeing any, then I ask for a motion regarding acceptance of the consent agenda, item 5A. Director Gray.
Yeah, I move that the consent agenda item 5A be accepted by the board.
Could you read the title of it, please?
Okay, the title being, go back here, agenda 5A, which is the consideration to direct staff to advertise for an open position on the finance committee and a second open position on the policy committee.
Thank you. And do I see a second for that?
I'll second
Director
that.
Dean? Oh, sorry. I saw one up, hand go up a little bit faster. Director Frommer, sorry. All right. Osana, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Director Gray, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean. Aye. Director Farmer.
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. Vice President Howell.
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Aye. And President Steidel.
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel. Aye. 5 ayes. Thank you.
Thank you, Osana. We'll move on then to our regular business items. 6A, of course, has already been addressed. So we move on to agenda item 6B. And GM Weigold, will you introduce the agenda item, please?
Yes, thank you, President Steidel. Agenda number 6B is discussion and consideration of the East Ranch restroom design and presentation. Staff recommends that the board discuss and consider the restroom design following a presentation by Civil Design Studios. As you know, we were awarded a grant from San Luis Obispo County for a design. And so the board authorized Civil Design Studios to refine a design plan following board guidance to pursue a pre-manufactured restroom option. So this will be Civil Design Studios' final report to the board per our design contract. And following conclusion of the report, staff will be presenting a final report on the grant that we received for this back to Slo County.
All right. Thank you, GM Weigold. And what we will do first is move to public comment. So, Osana.
Yes, I have a Chelsea Foster. Go ahead, please. Go ahead, Chelsea.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. How's everyone doing? Thank you. I'm happy to be here for public comment. I wanted to just ask a couple quick things. We spoke of a timeline a couple weeks back when I was on call, and I was wondering what the update was on that. That's, of course, regarding the skate park, and I'll circle that around.
So, Ms. Foster, I'm sorry, but our agenda item is about the restroom design being presented today. So we need to maintain the conversation with that specifically.
Got it. So with regard to that, I ask this because I understand that the grant is coming to a deadline soon. And that said, I know that community members view the grant as a justifiable funding for the skate park. And with relation to the bathroom, just on a separate note, I was just curious about some transparency regarding the action of the bathroom at the East Ranch. Specifically because I just noticed recently in town, there was a line of trees up on the left side of the dog park that was being watered by the county. And it seemed like kind of like a road going to nowhere around by the dog park. And I know that's a very expensive bathroom. And everybody's just kind of, just as a general consensus in the community, wondering why all the funds are going to the bathroom. And they're just wondering, A, the timeline, and B, just some transparency on that. And I also just wanted to say something positive, which is awesome that a manager was allocated to that project as well. So just all in one big circle, curious of those things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Foster. Do we have any other public comment, Osana?
I do not see anything. I'm going to double check.
Do you have any written comment?
I do not. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. What we'll do then is bring this back to the board and receive the presentation by Mr. Soto. Good afternoon, Monty.
Good afternoon, everybody. So I should ask, Carlos, is there anything you want to say before I get started here? Just want to offer that.
Yeah, no, I think, at the PROS Commission, as was mentioned, there was some discussion about the restroom, and Monty made the presentation to the PROS Commission in regards to the board's recommendations at the last board meeting, and they were all in favor of the decisions, and the only change that was made, as was mentioned earlier, was about the orientation of the restroom, and you'll see on the map that it has been changed with the doors facing towards the parking lot. But besides that, nothing else to add except thanks to Monty. The project, obviously, it's been about a year or so of work, and obviously want to thank Monty, as this is the final presentation. He's done a great job for us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Soto.
Okay, so I don't have a lot to update you on. I assume everybody's seen all of the final drawings that I've provided to the board for this meeting. A lot of the picture essentially stayed the same. My recent work has been more focused on more of the engineering details and specifications for construction. The current design and construction plans that I've provided you with do specify the automatic fixtures that you had requested. And as Carlos mentioned, the building has been rotated to face the parking lot as requested. I did work with Ray D'Enzo to coordinate the specific utility point of connections for the construction of the bathroom. I should also mention I know I had this a slight discussion with Director Farmer about this, but the cost estimate is the bottom line cost is slightly higher than what I had initially estimated, but that is largely due to the fairly large contingency that I placed on the cost estimate. In addition to the automatic fixtures that were added in and a little bit of a buffer on the actual cost of that bathroom, specifically because this is not an impending project. If it happens in the next couple of years, the way prices are increasing, I wanted to provide a large enough buffer on the price so that we don't go over budget when you choose to do this project. Last thing I would like to mention, we did discuss the light facing downward at the PROS meeting, and I had assured everybody that the county requires downward facing lights. And I just realized I did not actually put that on the plans as well, and I apologize. I've just updated my plan. I can resend it to the board or to the CCSD staff, and I now have that called out. But I would like to assure you that the requirements for exterior lighting are downward facing, and now the plans will say that as well. Even though the picture may not accurately represent that. Other than that, I'm open for questions if anybody has questions, but it's a fairly simple, straightforward project. So any questions?
So do any of the board members have any questions directly for Mr. Soda regarding the design? Director Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Soto, for the fine work you've done in the multiple presentations. Just a little question about when you mentioned contingency and a shield, basically a shield against inflation. What is the time frame of the estimate? In other words, how long does this the price good essentially that you have here?
That's a good question. Those, I believe, were based on 2020 National Building Cost Estimate book values. I would say that, roughly speaking, you could count on that for the next 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Is there a commitment involved in this, or is it contractual, or just something we have to hope for?
No, it's just a signed engineer's estimate.
Okay.
Typically, those are used for bonding purposes. However, that's not the case here. This is just my best estimate with my stamp on it for your use and knowledge.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Just for feedback, Director Gray, the only real commitment that we have regarding this today is that we need to formally notify SLO County, gave us the grant, that we were in formal receipt of the design. That was something that was a stipulation as a completion activity for the grant. And so, in fact, I'll probably be requesting a motion for that later, just so that we've got a full circle on the action here. Vice President Howell.
Briefly, I noticed that we don't have a percentage for the engineering administration. So I'm just kind of wondering about that.
A percentage for the engineering administration.
It's right below your contingencies number.
I see. That's just a standard line on my cost estimate. I would say that the vast majority of the engineering has already been done on this, obviously, because these are the documents I've produced for you. There likely will be a small amount of additional work required to obtain a construction permit from the county when you choose to move forward with this.
Right.
I could definitely update this if you would like.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
So that being said, let me ask the question, Mr. Danzo, I'm assuming also, and maybe incorrectly, but I'm assuming that any of that engineering activity would probably be something that would be generated in-house by your organization.
Yes, as much as we can do in-house, we will do. And even with some of the as much of the construction relating to connection of utilities, we intend to do that as well.
That was my other question, that I thought that there were probably costs that are represented in this estimate that are something that can be addressed internally with our own staff. So, Director Farmer?
Yes, thank you, President Steidel. I just wanted to ask something. I know you said earlier that we're just right now just discussing the design of the bathroom, but I wanted to ask a question. This is regarding on page 59 of the agenda packet under errors and omissions insurance. Now, I didn't bother to look that up and Google it or anything, so I don't necessarily know what it means. But the idea, I mean, other than the explanation here, but the amount here of $2 million. So is that like normal? And if we need a policy such as that, how much does that cost?
I'd like to take that question if you don't mind. So errors and omissions insurance is something that professional engineers and architects purchase to protect themselves if they make a mistake on their design. So it's not something at all related to the CCSD. It's something that I carry.
It's his own insurance. We don't carry the impact of that. He's okay. Letting us know how he's insured.
All right. I didn't understand it correctly then. So thank you, Monty.
Yes.
Are there any other questions by any of the directors? And I'll come back also first to Carlos and then also to Rate. If there are any additional comments or insights you want to provide as far as this design or the bathroom itself is concerned. Carlos?
Yeah, no, thank you. I think Monty answered all the questions and gave a great presentation. Just as a side note, as has been mentioned, we did receive a grant from the county. We were supposed to submit a final product at the end of August, and we asked for an extension knowing that we weren't going to be able to make it. And so the extension that the county gave us was till the end of this month, October 31st. And so that's why after the board accepts the design, we'll be, as general manager mentioned, we'll be submitting that final product to them. But that's all I have.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Danzo?
I don't have any additional comments.
Okay. Thank you. So coming up, Director Dean.
So this bathroom is built somewhere else and hauled here.
Yes.
I just noticed it was prefabricated. So as far as the concrete block work and all of that, is that just like fascia that's put on once it's here, or is that already on there when it gets here?
No, it's fully constructed. It's all concrete block. It's fireproof. It's a very solid structure, and they transport it here. Our contractor. So there would be I should have mentioned this earlier. There would be a competitive bid, obviously, to get a contractor to perform this work. They would bring utilities to the location where we connect, and they would prepare a pad for the bathroom to sit on. And then they just take a crane and they set it in the place and pour some concrete around it, hook up the utilities, and that's it. It was very simple from a site work.
Cool, I'd like to see that happen.
Vice President Howell.
Just to add one thing that perhaps Monty didn't think to mention in that regard, and that is that the bathroom is actually portable. It can be, if the stream were to suddenly change course, we could go in there with a crane and lift that whole thing up and move it. It's specially designed so it can be picked up.
That is correct. If you ever chose to move it, you could move it. It has a lifting point. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, excellent. I don't know that I was aware of that, Vice President Howe. I really appreciate hearing that. That's another interesting aspect to it then. Functional and utilitarian. All right. Are there any more questions? Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you. Before we make a motion, I just want to make a comment or two. I'd like to know when, since this bathroom will be probably installed in the next 2 years or so. That's the feeling that we're getting here. So when are we going to have a plan, the district? When are we going to have a plan for this recreational area so people can actually come there and be using the bathroom other than at the dog park? We're going to be getting the funding to pursue that plan. And how long do we estimate that it would take to complete the plan? I'm not asking for an answer right now. I'm just posing those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. So in actuality, I have two motions I'd like to suggest. And in an effort to move this along, I think the first is the acceptance of the report from Mr. Soto, and to direct staff to be able to notify SLO County that we are in completion of and in compliance with requirements that they have regarding the grant that we received for the design of the bathroom. And putting that forward, is there a second to that? Director Dean, I saw your hand first. If it's yes. A second, that okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And Osana, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. President Steidel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel. Aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean. Aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. And Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Aye. 5 ayes. Thank you.
Fine. Thank you. And for the first motion of agenda item 6B, providing for the staff to direct back to SLO County our completion of the requirements and satisfaction of the grant monies received for the bathroom design. The vote is 5-0. And a second motion I'd like to make, and this the intent here is that sometimes when something comes forward as a report or format of information, it's easy to kind of lose track of the next steps that need to happen. So I would like to suggest that we have staff begin to investigate resources for moving the design forward and to provide potential options and timing. If it's something that we need to take into consider setting aside reserves for a couple of years, whatever the assessment might be that we can use to understand how we can bring this to completion, since we've gone this far, invested this much energy and time into coming up with a design, and request that staff be able to, and by staff in this respect, obviously I'm directing towards GM Weigel, but I imagine that a lot of this will be something that our finance manager, Ms. Duffield, will be involved in also, as well as probably our utilities manager. And then return to the board no later than the second meeting in November with their findings, just to at least give us a cursory idea of what kinds of things we need to be considering as far as trying to move this forward and not allow it to languish because other things take precedence over time and that happens quickly. So if I were to state the motion simply, it would be to direct staff to begin investigation regarding resources for moving the design forward and providing possible options and timing to return to the board no later than the second November board meeting with their findings. If you're comfortable with that and be willing to have a second, President Hallie, your hand was up first.
I was going to so move, but I could also second it if you're moving it.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. We have a motion and a second. So, Osana, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. President Steidel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel. Aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. And Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean. Aye. Five ayes.
Thank you, Osana. All right. So for the motion to direct staff to begin investigation on resources for moving the design forward on the bathroom and to return to the board no later than the second meeting in November with findings. That vote is 5-0. So thank you all very much. And before we move on, Mr. Soto and Mr. Mendoza, you also, because I know how involved you've been in this process, but I really want to extend my thanks to you both personally, because I know there was a lot of effort and a lot of focus to bringing this here to get us to this point of having a finalized design in place and to the point of even finding the grant money to be able to proceed to do that, which was obviously instrumental also. And thank you for such a professional output and presentation, Mr. Soto.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both very much. All right. If there's nothing else, then what we will do is go ahead and move on to our next agenda item, which is agenda item 6C. And GM Weichold, if you could introduce the agenda item, please.
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 6C is discussion and consideration of adoption of ordinance 03-2021. Amending Chapter 4.12 of the CCSD Municipal Code relating to the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. It is recommended that the Board of Directors adopt the ordinance amending Chapter 4.12 of the CCSD Municipal Code relating to the Water Shortage Contingency Plan by title only and waive further reading. As the Board is aware, the board adopted the 2020 Water Shortage Contingency Plan a couple of months ago and adopted the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and the requirements of the California Water Code Section 10632A3A, which provides for the inclusion of six standard water shortage levels corresponding to progressive ranges up to 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50% shortages, and as well as greater than 50% shortage in water shortage contingency plans. The board introduced this ordinance at its September 16 meeting, which replaces the legacy emergency water conservation program in its entirety. It's recommended that the board adopt the ordinance by title only and waive further reading. If any of your questions, have Utilities Manager D'Enzo and District Counsel Carmel standing by.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Weichold. First, what we will do is take public comment regarding this item. So, Sana?
Yes, I have Dr. Bettenhausen. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I missed the public comment opportunity on the last two motions that were adopted by the board. So I'm very sorry, because I would have had something to say about the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and the grant of $500,000 from the county, but that was not, opportunity was not given us. So I very much regret that. I now would like to say about this item, it is one of the most intriguing manifestations of the possibilities of accounting and numbers that I have encountered in my long life, and I wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. I have to say I'm a little taken back. I'm not sure what your references were to prior motions on the prior items. I'm not sure if the $500,000 grant or what that related to in some way. So I apologize if... So obviously, I'm sorry you weren't there for the public comment either, because I'm not sure what it's in reference to.
I was.
Director Farmer?
If I'm not mistaken, when the district ultimately purchased this property through various grants, we got $500,000 the county. And one of the conditions of that $500,000 was that we use the east portion of the ranch for a recreational area. I believe that's what Dr. Bettenhausen is referencing.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Director Farmer. That does clarify the reference. Thank you. All right. Do we have any additional public comment? I'm not seeing any. So we will bring it back to the board. Do we have any questions from the board? As this is just the completion of the resolution and then adoption of the change to district code, this is kind of the end product of the process. Mm-hmm. So we have the opportunity to adopt this by title without further reading. Do I have a motion for doing that? Director Gray.
Yes, I move that the board adopt ordinance 03-20201, amending Chapter 4.12 of the CCSD Municipal Code relating to the Water Shortage Contingency Plan.
All right. Is there a second? Director Dean, I saw your hand.
Yes, I second the motion.
Okay.
Can we add to that and waive further reading?
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Director Farmer?
Thank you. I am waving. It has nothing to do with further reading.
I'm seeing.
It was a joke. But I was trying to get your attention. So one thing I want to point out here on page 77 of this document here, this agenda item, implementation criteria for a water shortage stage. And it says, the district will perform an annual water supply and demand assessment. And further on in that sentence, to forecast water supply availability for the upcoming anticipated dry season. You talk about, I don't know where, if the word unpredictable is somewhere in this, but anything that has to do with future water availability, demand probably won't change a heck of a lot, but availability certainly is going to. And we have no way of knowing what is on the horizon with regard to, and like I say, if we hadn't had that atmospheric river, back in January, I have no idea where we'd be right now with regard to water availability and water usage as a result. So I just want to mention that. And just one more question. When will we be performing the annual water supply and demand assessment? Thank you.
Mr. Carmel, I see your hand up. Does it have to do with the fact that it was waiving any further reading or? Okay. Perhaps I can help Director Farmer. This is criteria of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, which is part of the UWMP, which the board approved. And it's based on the criteria, state criteria that was established for those things also. That's the six stages are not something that CCSD devised, but are stages of criteria that were established at the state level for UWMP. Mr. D'Anzo.
Yes, yes, all of that is true, President Seidel. But the question about the annual assessment, when is that done? We have to submit that every year, and it's due also in July. And that's why we based our water shortage contingency plan on an April 1st date where we, you know, because by that time, usually we have received typically all the rains historically that we would expect. And, you know, it would allow us to set a good baseline to predict the unpredictability of water supply, even through the dry season, and you know, help to get those forecasts in. And so, but July every year is when the annual assessment is due. And we will be performing that starting early next year.
If I could just comment, I just want to say that we can only hope for more water availability this year because we have two creeks and we could very easily be in one of those without a paddle or sufficient amount of water. So thank you so much.
Thank you for the solution, Director Farmer. Vice President Howell.
Just a quick question. I want to be sure that I'm reading something correctly and it's not a typo. On page 81, the 9P2 to SS4 gradient, last sentence of paragraph A, when the gradient falls to negative 0.9 feet, is that supposed to be a negative? In other words, for 3 months, it's going to go negative? Is that what...
That is correct. That it is a negative. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to be sure. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions or comments from the board? All right. We've had a motion and a second. So may we move to roll call, please, Osana?
Yes, Director Gray, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer, aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell, aye. And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel, aye. 5 ayes to adopt the ordinance 03-2021.
Thank you.
And wait for the reading.
Thank you. Thank you, Osana. So for agenda item 6C, which has adopted ordinance 03-2021, amending chapter 4.12 of the municipal code, our vote is 5-0. Thank you. And we'll move to agenda item 6D. And Mr. Weigel, will you introduce the item for us, please?
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 6D is discussion and consideration of results of the board ad hoc committee report on policies. Staff recommends that the board of directors discuss and consider the report prepared by the ad hoc committee on CCSD policies. As you can see, it's a substantial list, and Directors Gray and Howell are present to discuss the process that they used to put this together. And of course, the staff is standing by to answer questions on specific policies there.
Okay, thank you very much. What I'd like to do first is move to public comment. And Osana, do we have any attendees who would like to speak?
I do not see anyone, and I'll double check the board comment. No, I do not see any. Thank you.
And no written. All right. Okay, then I will bring it back to the board, and it would, since Director Howell and Director Gray, since the two of you were the construct of this ad hoc committee for this report on policies, I'm assuming you'd be in a position to give us a little bit of overview to this and if there are any recommendations that you carry forward with it. So which of you would like to speak? Both. Okay.
Vice President Howell, speak. You go first now, because Vice President Howell did a lot of the preliminary work, especially in the inventorying of the policy. So maybe he should talk first, and I can talk a little bit about the process.
Okay, some of the front end process. Okay.
Yeah, front end process.
You're
muted. You're muted.
Oh, I have permission to speak. So, I actually was going to pass it on to Director Gray to do most of the talking, but
I can do that too.
I will say that what I did do prior to this work was it was actually in trying to get a handle on the policy committee's work and the just the general policy status, or let's say the general status of the board's policies or the district's policies. And the result of that was a rather extensive inventory listing using the CSDA manual as a template, as a way of trying to identify if there were gaps in our, it's one thing to just go through and look at our policies, but to see if there are areas that maybe we aren't addressing that might be addressed. It was useful to use the CSDA template as a way of doing that.
Yeah.
So what ended up was a rather extensive spreadsheet, which if anyone is curious, it appears when this report was originally received by the board a couple of meetings ago, I think, and as an appendix, the entire spreadsheet was printed. What we have here is, and what the spreadsheet did was to identify every policy document that I could find online or in directors' handbooks or wherever else they might exist, just to document their existence and to line them up against the template of the CSDA classification system. And also, as a result of that, we ended up with a sort of a history of some of these policies. It's because they might have been adopted in the past and then revised. We encountered situations where there were actually multiple incarnations of a policy. And then, of course, you have the problem of trying to determine which is the real one. So this was kind of the raw material that Director Gray and I worked through. And I think at that point, Director Gray, I've explained enough that I think you can take it.
Yeah, I'll talk. President Stadell, I'll talk about the process and the framework. Essentially, the framework for this.
Can I ask a question before we go forward? Mm-hmm. For the definition of no action, staff review, and board review, when it's indicated as, for instance, staff review, does that mean there needs to be a review of the existing document, and you would know that by looking at the reason, or that it could be either that, or it could be that there is no policy and there should be a consideration of where it would be. And again, you get that indication by looking at reason for classification. Is that a reasonable kind? Okay. So it could be either or.
It could be either or, yes.
You can make an assumption based on the reason for classification.
That actually, okay. That three bucket, structure is kind of what we decided to finally get all of these policies under something with a boundary around it. Like we're not going here, there, and there, kind of trying to figure out what to do about these things. The general rule is that a policy that is a board policy governing the board and governing its procedures, i.e. like a bylaw, and most of our bylaws, those are directly under the purview of the board.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are procedural, essentially operational policies, and that's, of course, there's a little bit of a judgment call sometimes like that, but operational policies, which are matters under the purview of staff, those are for staff review. And then where there is a policy, and we use a slightly arbitrary cutoff date of like late 2019, where there's a policy that's recently been adopted and finalized by the board, at this point we say no review needed, unless there's some extraordinary new development. Mm-hmm. So the no review needed basically is policies that are current, they've been recently updated and adopted by the board. Staff review is policies that cover operational procedures, and they're primarily, you notice, in financial management and risk management, communications and technology, and so forth, things that are administrative. Personnel policies specific to, and that's a specific category under CSDA, they're not on this list because we consider them all essentially staff purview. So they're not included in this table just by, but they're there basically, you know, almost by reference. And then board policies, as you notice, there are certain things that are actually probably due for bylaw review. And there are several policies, and I thank Don for this because he did a lot of, he did detective work on this, that used to be in the bylaws. And for some reason they dropped away. And some of them looked like they might be useful to have. Now there's one I noticed that we really do need to have is attendance in board meetings. There's no rule about how many meetings you can miss, which is sort of standard and used to be in the bylaws in the old days. And it's in most bylaws. So certain things there are probably bylaw review, incorporated into bylaw review that's coming up. There are other board policies that might not be quite like directly bylaw related, but I think the majority of them, if you look at it, you could see that bylaws tend to be about bylaws. So that's in a nutshell why there are three categories and what the categories mean.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So I think both of you invested a great deal of time to this and attention and focus. So I don't know that there's been an opportunity to have that kind of overview and relationship and definition within categories of who needs to be taking the lead in doing things.
Yeah.
If there's something that needs to be addressed. That being said, is there anything that either of you would draw to immediately that you think that the board needs to be taking a look at or getting some focus toward doing, either by the board definition of policy or by staff actions for generating or updating? Vice President Howell?
Yeah.
I do have a couple of things, but I'd like a motion for one thing. This is not absolutely, it was kind of related, President Steidel, to what you were saying, but it's also a little bit to the side. But I think what we probably need to have is real clarity. And what I'm referring to is middle of page 83. This is one of our recommendations. And I think we probably need a motion on this one. Existing and future district policies are to be presented in a public document titled CCSD Policy Handbook. Policies will be organized by topic following the framework of the California Special District Association Policy Handbook. CCSD policies that correspond to numbered model CSDA policies are to be numbered accordingly. I think that because that is going to end up with a actual result, namely a policy handbook, and that we're actually asking something from staff here as they move forward and collecting all these things in one place, giving it a label and an organization. And so I think that we probably need a motion on this one. So I would like to move what I just said.
All right. Director Gray, was there something?
Just as a further note too, is I think President Howell is referring to that all three of those provisions about the CSDA handbook, because I wanted to note that there are some policies we have that are not in the CSD, they don't have an analog in the CSD handbook. We gave them numbers that were related to sort of the topic areas of CSD, but these are, if they're not unique to us, or at least not CSD, but those are included in that in what the procedure that Vice President Howell was talking about. They're in the second bullet point, basically. So I think that should be included to the whole, yeah, the whole procedure.
I'd like to jump in on that one, if I may. Director, President Seidel, may I?
Oh, by all means, yes.
Yeah, I thought about that, Director Gray. And then I thought, well, you know, that's getting awfully wordy because each one of these recommendations could be, but I think all of the other recommendations actually follow from the initial one. So I don't know that we really need to specify that. That I was just thinking it gets a little complex after that. So that was my thinking on that. But I'm not, if we wanted to include all that, it'd be okay. But I don't think it's really necessary. That was my point on that. And while I got the floor, if I may, just this is not absolutely related to this motion, but once we get through this, if it passes or not, I would mention that I did have a conversation with GM Weigold, ask him what is the highest priority of all those staff review situations down there. And he did give me, I'm not going to do it right now, but what I'm going to suggest is as we move forward, maybe we ask staff for their three highest priorities and maybe get the directors their highest priorities and then kind of bring that together and come up with a work plan. But that's a separate issue. So right now, it's just my motion is that paragraph that I just read.
Okay, yeah, I certainly see the value is in getting the structure established up front so that we have something to ply ourselves toward as we move through some of the things you just suggested, Vice President Howell. I guess it's a matter of getting it to be as succinct as possible, so that let me ask the question. When you say it's following the framework of the CSDA policy handbook, is it your intention that it be very specific, or that it follow the general framework of it with a little bit of flexibility? Because I don't know that having the policies correspond to the CSDA policies, I'm not sure, you know, if it's worth that level of detail management. And so I'm just asking the question, Director Gray.
Yeah, that was the point I was trying to clarify. I think as I read that one, Vice President Howell's motion, it does include by reference, talking about the framework of the policy handbook. In other words, it doesn't have to be exactly the numbers that are the CSD policy numbers, but if we have policies that are in a topic area, as is explained later on, that's still in the framework of the CSDA policy handbook. So yeah, we're not following every number slavery, you know, just exactly verbatim, but we are trying to make sure that the type of organization that the CSDA has, which is extremely useful, be the governing organization basically of our policy handbook. Yeah, is that pretty close? Yeah, I think that explains it.
I agree, Director Gray. I think that is sort of, and I can say that we've already, I mean, we've, within their numbering scheme, their broad scheme, we have actually already had to invent categories.
Quite a few, actually.
And we make it with us,
Let me make a suggestion. I think that the majority of the intent, if I'm understanding it correctly, may be able to be expressed in two of the sentences that are in that listing of recommendations. And the first sentence would be in that first paragraph, beginning with district policies are to be presented in a public document titled CCSD Policy Handbook. Policies will be organized by topic following the framework of the California District Association CSDA Policy Handbook. Stop.
Oh, that works.
And then as a second piece to that, if we drop to the next paragraph where it says CCSD policies, not a NAGLA, analogous.
Analogous.
Thank you.
Good.
Too much in the day for me to get there with that one. Thank you. I appreciate it. To particular CSDA models are to be organized by CSDA topic areas, but will have CCSD assigned numbers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, do you feel that sufficiently captures?
I think so, Director President Steidel. Actually, I would go one further, I think, because it does clarify an issue. I would perhaps even include the subsequent sentence that this does apply to previously adopted and currently posted policies. On the other hand, this kind of goes, it's sort of understood.
If you're creating a handbook, I think there's a natural procedural process that happens to that will make that happen, but.
Okay, that's good.
I'd be doing it that way, but.
I'm backing off that one, but I think addition that you suggested is great. It states what needs to happen, I think, in clear.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask the next question then. In terms of the top three discussion that you would have, is there anything here that needs to happen additionally to what in our conversation right now that needs to address that in any way, or should we just be looking to put forward a motion with these two sentences?
I go with the motion.
I would go with the motion. At
this point, yes. All right. I can either read it again or one of the two of you can. I have it right here if it's easier that way.
Have it, you read it.
Okay. So the motion is regarding. You can just be this. District policies are to be presented in a public document titled CCSD Policy Handbook. Policies will be organized by topic following the framework of the California Special District Association CSDA Policy Handbook. CCSD policies not analogous.
Yeah.
No. I don't know why I cannot wrap myself around that one.
Analogous.
Putting the emphasis on it incorrectly, and it creates a problem. To particular CSDA models are to be organized by CSDA topic areas, but will have CCSD assigned numbers. Okay. That would be the motion. And is there a second? Director Gray?
Second with a quick question. Is there any need with having said that, use that language to also say that the board adopts the report?
Well, it was,
overall, we adopt the report and specifically, yada, yada, or maybe this and that.
How about the board receives the ad hoc committee report on policies and determines that.
Okay.
District policies. Will that do it? Because we don't generally receive by motion on ad hoc committee reports.
Yeah. I'll second that. That's as stated. Yeah. If that's fine with the person making the motion.
So let me ask: is everyone else okay with going forward in that way? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Director Gray, you were providing a second on that?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Osana, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer, aye. And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel, aye. Five ayes.
Thank you. So for agenda item 6D, addressing the policy, district policies construct, it is voted on 5-0 for acceptance. Thank you.
If I may, President Seidel.
I was just going to ask, is there a desire for a quick break by any?
Well, I wouldn't mind that, but that's not what I was going to say.
All right.
I was just going to thank Director Gray and Vice President Howell for this excellent ad hoc committee report. They did a great job. But, and yes, 2 minutes would be appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Karen.
Yes, quick 2 minute. Great.
President Stridell, did we take public comment on this?
Yes.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, there was none.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you for asking, though. yes. So, how about 4:05? That gets us 4 minutes.
All right, I'll set it to return at 4:05.
Thank you.
Of course.
Okay.
All righty, and we are rocking and rolling. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Griffin. All right, we've come to item 7, board member committee and liaison reports. And first, I'd like to take public comment here. So, Osana?
Oh, there.
Are you available, Osana?
I'll go investigate.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I'm doing the agenda as we speak. All right.
We're doing public comment, please.
Okay, public comments, yes. Go ahead, Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Good afternoon, President Steidel, members of the board and staff. I just wanted to make my written comment part of the record for today's meeting. This is a written comment to the Finance Committee at their last meeting regarding the report on underfunded liabilities. My comment was related to the paragraph titled Vacant Lots Owned by the CCSD. My point is that the state and county expectations of the district for retirement of vacant lots is somewhat complicated, and there's a number of different documents that relate to it. And I'm simply providing a list of the relevant documents for your consideration in the future. Some of these are available on the CCSD website, and others, we have most of them on the Cambria Forest Committee website. Sometimes that might be the most convenient way to find them. But anyway, this is an important topic, not only for the unfunded expenses issue, but for the coastal development permit for the water reclamation facility and other things which may require discussion of the build-out reduction program and the transfer development credits program, which is another lot retirement program. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you. Yes, and Dr. Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I have already sent this to the board, and I asked that it be included in the public record today of the meeting. And I just want to say that I appreciated so much the ad hoc committee report at that Finance Committee meeting on the 28th of September. I think they did excellent work, spending volunteer time beyond reason. It was an excellent report. As a committee, then decided to forward it to you, Board of Directors, President Steidel. They were going to do revisions. My question is, when will this revised version of the subcommittee of the ad hoc committee report be available to the public? The second aspect of that meeting intrigues me, and I'm not expecting you to discuss it today, obviously, because that's not your policy to do with public comment. Near the end of that meeting on the 28th of September, the Standing Committee on Finance, Ms. Stewart, one of the members, asked when the expenditures for legal consultants would be put on the agenda. And this was the response. Director Gray, who is moderating the meeting, replied, quote, "I'll say something about the parameters of the committee. I should have said this earlier, where our role is not to decide how money gets spent. It's more about where the finance committee, we're about how money is, how to build the thing, how money is raised," end of quotation. I hope that the CCSD Board of Directors clarifies in the very near future, but not today, of course. One, whether the word finance in the Standing Committee on Finance refers only to raising money or also to analysis of how the money is spent by the CCSD. Two, whether the Standing Committee may address a particular financial issue without having been requested to do so by the CCSD Board of Directors. And three, whether the director who moderates the meeting and is not a member of the Standing Committee has the authority to revise documents and forward them to the Board of Directors after the vote is taken. I ask this in part about the Standing Committee on Finance, but I think once again, this is a manifestation of some confusion for us public members about what the authority of the Board of Directors is and what the authority of each standing committee is. But I urge you to put on your agenda, or however you do it, to address the question, a biggie in my mind, what is the meaning of the word finance, both in this context and in general? I hope that the oversight of fiscal responsibility is thoroughgoing, widespread, and deep by the CCSD, and that is the expectation with which I will look forward to your explanation of this at a future meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Osana?
Christine Heinrichs, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Regarding the Finance Committee's report, I do support Crosby's mention of this issue of divestment of these lots. This is a very short-sighted way to approach this issue. This is an important part of the mitigation for the emergency water supply project, is the build-out reduction plan, of which these lots are part. There's a lot more involved in this. And really, the cost of maintenance of these lots is relatively minimal compared to the potential problems involved in trying to relieve the district of that ownership. That is certainly something that's within the district's purview. I'd also like to mention the Director Gray's report from the Finance Committee. In the report he gave the board, he ignored the statement from the ad hoc committee on unfunded, underfunded, understaffed projects and activities, which said, as the group began its analysis of the issue, it became apparent that there is insufficient revenue for the district to continue to provide the same services and at the same level as it has been attempting to do, or to expand services to meet the additional requests. I hope the board will read that the ad hoc committee's full report. If the district is in fact unable to continue providing the services that Cambrians have become accustomed to receiving, it seems that that should be at the very top of the finance committee's report and of the board's concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich.
I don't have any more comments.
All right. And do you have any written?
I do not.
All right. Thank you, Osana. Thank you. All right. We have a number of reports this time, and as we have a little bit of time, if there are any directors who would like to highlight any of the information in their reports, that would be excellent. And I also want to express an appreciation to Director Dean regarding the report that she provided regarding her CCSD or CSDA interaction, the training that she attended, and the significance of the information that she brought back to share with us. It's very much appreciated. Well written and very specific with a lot of information. So thank you. Are there any questions or any comments that board members would like to make regarding any of their Director Gray?
Yes, I did want to clear up a couple of, I think, little misunderstandings about this report that was submitted last week. At the time of the report, we did not have a final copy of that ad hoc subcommittee report, and it's noted that we, in the vote, we had to have had send it. We sent it back to the ad hoc subcommittee for revision, essentially. Very minor revisions. The content remains the same, but there's presentation. There was changes made to make it more clearly presented as to what the recommendations were and what the analysis was. And a couple of things had to be updated based on new information. And we are there'll be also some kind of statement included in it that notes that this is not, this is the first stage, the first step in a basically a two-part process that we're on the strategic plan objective. So the reason it's not in this report is that it's still, at the time this report was done, it was still being finalized. I think it's been submitted now to Finance Manager Duffield, and we will be, it'll be coming back to the board at whenever the president of the board wants to put it on the agenda. And also on a little bit of, I might've been somewhat more articulate, but on the Finance Committee's role, I do see it as essentially a, what is the equivalent to a Ways and Means Committee, because if you're starting to talk about how the district spends money, you're talking about the district policies in general, the decisions of how money is spent. Obviously, we go over the budget. We look at the systems and the, you know, the financial health of the district. But when you get into policies like, what are you going to do with the money that's left over from the settlement of the CDM Smith lawsuit and things like that? Those are policy decisions the board has to make in a way of just, you know, what they want to do going forward. And also, I should note that chairs of committees are members of the committees. There are six members in the committee, and that's necessary so that you can have three member ad hoc subcommittees. And the chair, of course, always has a tie-breaking vote. And currently we have four members of the committee, and there could well be a tie-breaking vote from the chair in this case. So chairs are members, and that's in the bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you. The Director Howell, there's one question that I had about the policy committee report, and I was trying to understand the discussion regarding the possibility or desirability of conducting regular annual evacuation drills in order to be prepared for wildfire. I'm not sure quite how that ended up being a part of a policy committee meeting. We have any number of organizations, including an ad hoc committee of the board and the Fire Safe Focus Group locally, as well as our fire chief, who have authority in terms of those kinds of things. So although I appreciate they may have had a dialogue about that, it really sits outside of policy committee. What was your take on the intent in the conversation?
That's interesting. I think really we didn't get very far with it, but I think the idea here was to explore the possibility of a role that the district might take in terms of supporting some kind of annual fire drill issue. And it was a case where, in this case, the our vice chairman, Gordon Heinrichs, who brought this forward, he had been puzzling in his own mind about how all these different agencies who are all, as you say, you know, all working. But he said he'd over a period of time, he couldn't really see his way to see how there could be any, you know, from a policy perspective, how there could be any kind of unifying something. And apparently Mill Valley for about the last 10 years, I may have the numbers a little bit wrong, but for the last 10 years has devised a evacuation plan that they exercise every year. And he was just intrigued by how the different elements of the community were getting together in order to organize this, because it couldn't be just done by one. It would have to be a cooperative effort. And I think that's what he was getting at. Where we go with this, it would probably be if we go further with that, I would anticipate a very like three sentence or four sentence policy saying what the district's position might be in terms of supporting that kind of an effort. I don't know where it would go, but its main purpose was to get that video out and visible, just to show how these agencies might work together. That's all.
Rather than involving another element of an organ or another organization into a process that already exists, the recommendation would be that if there's a desire to understand how those interactions happen, that they familiarize themselves with the work that goes on with the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group, because that's a very specific organization that deals across all kinds of elements of the county. And frankly, until there would be something formulated that would have a structure to it that was probably agreed to and identified by Cal Fire and the Cambria Fire Department and everything else, there really wouldn't be any need for a policy on something that was not yet in existence. So a suggestion rather, yeah. so they don't feel frustrated by using their time towards something that really just will not possibly take them to the intent they desire, that perhaps being more familiar with some of the work that the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group does would be advantageous.
I think so. The other way too, it might be to phrase the situation. The question really in my mind, I'm only speaking for myself here on this one, but is what role, if any, should or could the district play in this issue? You know, and so that might be an area I don't know. Okay.
Well, it would probably be defined by the fire department. They're the ones who carry the expertise and the need, and they would be the ones who would be the controlling and directing element legally for people's interactions in that.
Yeah, probably. Because
they have the authority for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for the Resources and Infrastructure Committee report, Dr. Dean, I was really drawn by the reference to the presentation that the utilities manager made in this. And I don't know that, he isn't with us right now, but Mr. Weigold, I don't know whether perhaps, not knowing the specifics to this, but it's certainly as a discussion, point of discussion, might be something worthwhile I understand it was a slide presentation that might be of value to the board or possibly, something that would be Of course, it would be available on a Zoom meeting for R&I or from R&I. So I guess rather than taking the time to bring it to the board directly, certainly the board directors and the public could access that R&I meeting by Zoom to be able to take a look at that. But it looked like there was some great information for sharing that was shared in that environment. So if you have any suggestions about how to move that information forward for a broader audience, that'd be great.
We just have District Engineer D'Angelo rejoined. Ray, we're discussing the R&I board meeting synopsis on page 91. And you had given a detailed update on the studies in support of the CDP. And he presented a PowerPoint slide. Is there a way, question is there a way to share that with everyone in the public?
Sure.
Utilities side? Or?
I could do that. And that's not a problem.
Okay. Well, between that and the Zoom meeting that it was presented at originally, it will be 2 points of access for people to obtain information if they haven't seen it yet. Okay. Thank you, Ray. Sorry to make you
no problem.
Come all the way back in. It's appreciated, though. Thanks for dropping in. I was curious on the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve that the CCSD needs to enforce the ranch boundaries. And that was talking about, I guess there's been some excess extension of properties and things that's kind of going on. So actually my question was, what is our authorization or authority to invoke that kind of enforcement? Director Weigold, I don't know if GM Weigold, I don't know if you're in a position to address that.
Yeah, so there was a study done by the FFRP, and there are, about 9 to 12 encroachments of properties that border the ranch. And some of them are a foot or two, some of them are literally inches. And so the way we're trying to handle this is, at the time of sale, make that a condition of the transfer. And so,
that's the simplest.
Okay, so that would create an enforcement point.
Right, yeah. And FFRP has an obligation under their charter to enforce the those boundaries. And I don't know if District Council has anything additional to add on that.
Under the conservation easement, we have the duty to enforce them.
Oh, we do, okay.
Yes, do you? Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, as a long-term solution, then it sounds like ensuring that through any transfer of property would help address it, but I don't know if there are actions that are possible or can be directed or enforced as far as some of these others that you're making reference to, Ms. Weigold.
Okay. Oh yeah, here it is.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming some of those are going to resolve themselves in one form or another because of differing circumstances.
Yeah, the one that on the middle, the second paragraph on page 92, there was some issue. I questioned that we had the right property there. So there was a resurvey of that property, and it was found to be a couple of inches over. So so that's recent news from the FFRP group, and
okay,
we're working that issue.
Okay, thank you. Between myself and Mr. Niffen and GM Weigold, the board appointed committee for establishing the review process for communication and action between PROS and the CCSD board. The report is here. I don't know that this needs to be brought forward to a later board meeting for formal disposition in terms of motion or not, in that it's, you know, its intent is to facilitate communication, which kind of defines getting an agreement between the two parties that they're going to adopt to these processes. And I guess I'll ask the other directors how they feel about that, whether it has to be codified more formally or whether you're comfortable with what this represents. Nothing? Vice President Howell?
Yeah, I don't know that we need to formalize this with a motion, but the thought does occur to me. We might want to consider as we go forward, not today by any means, but just as we go forward, the idea that perhaps this could come under a category that might cover other areas as having to do with how our committees operate in general, and perhaps even how we do certain things at the board level, where we don't necessarily want to put it in bylaws, and you know, where it's cannot be easily manipulated or changed. But maybe we ought to consider sort of an operations manual of some kind. And if we were to do that, this would definitely be something that could go there. And it could be something we might want to consider that as we go forward, because I think there are other guidelines that every once in a while crop up. And so at some point, maybe mm-hmm. we can pull them all and put them in an operations manual.
Or a procedural manual of some kind. Yeah. It isn't exactly a desk procedure, but it's probably of that same ilk.
Yeah. Well, what do I do under this circumstance, or how do I achieve this particular thing? Yeah. But I think what is excellent here, it's good guidance, and we should probably all be following it, you know, trying to, so our communications are clear, you know, and unambiguous. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
I'm here.
Director Frommer. Oh, I guess I should call
Director Gray. Director Gray.
Yeah, Gray was first. Okay. Yeah. Director Gray.
Yeah, I'm interested in Vice President Howell's idea of in the future of getting this in the manual, in a sense, I guess, or somewhere that's like that. But I think for now, maybe we just see how it works for now, and just see how it works out.
Mm-hmm. Finding a way to codify it in some way.
And to see over the next couple months, because I think it's good, and I don't think we have to do it. Obviously, we can't do anything anyway to codify it. But I think we just want to wait and see how it works.
All right.
Anything more formal.
Director Frommer?
Yes. I'm wondering if there's a possibility, perhaps at the first board meeting in November, where there can be when Mr. Niffen is available again, when he's doing his PROS report, that we could just get a little bit of dialogue between the three of you to give us some brief feedback as to how you arrived at the conclusions that you came to and how the discussion went and that type of thing. Is that possible?
Well, yeah, I guess it isn't a common thing in that this is a pretty simple and straightforward ad hoc committee report, and generally an ad hoc committee report doesn't go into what our dialogue was in meeting. It's all three of us signed the bottom line to this, basically, that we were in agreement to it. So whatever conversation went on, the resulting information was what's here, and the three of us were in agreement. So okay. I'm not sure what the...
Yeah, I guess it's just my my sense of curiosity about it all, but I'll pass on it then. Thank you.
Okay. The NCAC liaison reports report was interesting, but again, where it doesn't affect the CCSD directly, it's more a point of information and interesting to know what kinds of things they're doing. Does anyone have any question or observations as far as the Special District Leadership Academy report that Director Dean made? Director Dean?
If you want to wait and see if anybody has any questions first, I'll wait to say what I have to say.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions first?
I'd like to hear what she has to say, but no questions.
Okay.
First of all, I want to again thank the board for allowing me to attend this. And as I said, accidentally twice in my report, this was a very valuable learning experience. But I was very impressed with how ahead of the game we were as a district on so many of the things that were discussed. When it comes to transparency to the public, that's an area that we're constantly being getting comments on. We are actually doing really well in that because with the standing committees, there's more opportunity for the public to see what's going on and to speak. The general manager is now taking advantage of some social media to post information and meeting announcements. We are one of the few districts that record our meetings and keep the video recordings of them for years so that people can go back and watch the meeting. So many of these districts only do action minutes and that's all that's kept. So someone can go back for us and watch an entire meeting and not just say, oh, they voted on this. So we're doing really good when it comes to public transparency. Another area that we really excelled at is when it comes to goals and objectives and strategic planning. We are one of the few districts that has actually gone through this type of strategic planning program that we just recently went through in this last year and constantly goes back and looks at it every month to see if we're on track. So many of the other districts said that they set a goal and then didn't look at it again for a year. And so we're doing really well. Another area that I was very impressed with is our finance manager and the way she's dealing with our district's finances. We are so lucky to have a finance manager, Duffield, and she is just so on track with everything we learned on how district finances are supposed to be done, the audits and all of that. So I was really pleased to see that. Another thing that I noticed is we are one of the few districts that have the amount of responsibilities, areas of responsibilities that we have. So many of the districts were just one thing, a cemetery district, a sewer district, a water district, a mosquito control district. We cover so many more areas in this tiny district that we have than any of the other ones did. Anyway, I thought this was really a great experience and it made me feel good that we were doing so well when it comes to what was being talked about. If I can go back to the R&I meeting real quick. I just wanted to say that the presentation that Ray D'Enzo did, I think would be very valuable if it is allowed for him to do that in his utilities report, because he answered so many of the questions that are being asked on where we are in the CDP and what our consultants that we have hired, such as Todd Groundwater and Cindy Cleveland, are doing and the type of data they're collected. So many questions were answered with that. And I hope that people would go back and watch the R&I meeting, but I think it would also be valuable if it could be brought forward in a CCSD meeting. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Oh, Cindy, you're muted.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. Just getting to the mute button. Vice President Howell.
I suddenly forgot. Wait a minute. Damn. I know. On Ray's presentation, I it might be possible. This is more for Jim Weigold. Maybe one of your other technical folks might be able. I know that it is possible to take a YouTube recording and snip the part that you want to keep. And so, if it were possible, if anyone knows how to do that, it would be possible to snip out that section of the R&I committee meeting and actually post it on the website. Failing that, may I suggest posting a link on the website with an indication of the timing of where the presentation starts? I would be no harm in doing that, as far as I can see. So the other thing, though, is I was so impressed at how well we're doing from what Director Dean was talking about. Tell me, though, is there anything in you? I mean, it's kind of overwhelming, actually, that we're doing so well, because, you know, if we listen to many people, you'd think we were perhaps just recently crawled out from under a rock. So, but are there things that we are not doing well that others are? Is there any way that in your Director Dean and your contacts with the folks there, that you got the sense that maybe some of these guys have done some things that we ought to be doing maybe better?
If I can speak.
Oh, certainly. Sorry.
Okay. The only area really that I thought maybe we could use a little bit of work on is defining our roles and the roles of staff. We're supposed to be making policy, and staff is supposed to be enacting the policy. And sometimes I think we get our wires crossed a little bit in where our parameters are. That really is the only area, and it's not any side's fault. It just looks like it's this area we need to do a little bit more work on. Reserves, there was a lot of discussion on reserves and how to determine what an appropriate amount is for each area and how to determine whether you have too much reserves. I think we're doing pretty good with that, except that I know that we don't have extra funds for reserves in the enterprise funds that they're saying we need to have, and I'm not quite sure how we need to deal with that. As far as everything else, I think it looked like we were doing really well. I didn't really see any specific areas that we really needed to change a whole lot. Of course, there's always room for improvement, no matter how you look at it, but we're really doing pretty good.
So Director Dean, I have a question. In the first item that you mentioned, as far as the a more delineated or defined roles with the board and with staff, on what side of the coin are you talking? I mean, are we talking about the board being too intrusive to staff, or the staff pursuing policy decisions by the board?
I think sometimes the board is not clear enough in our direction to the general manager for staff. And I think sometimes we get things brought to us that really should have been brought to us sooner for more discussion prior to it being brought forward to the board as a recommendation. There's sometimes where there's not enough discussion on some items with the board before a recommendation is brought back to the staff that we need to be a little more involved with before we can agree to a policy or a recommendation. That make any sense?
Thank you. I just needed to know whether it was both of us need to work towards something, or if there was something specific that you had in mind. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Any other Any other questions or comments regarding any of those reports? All right. We are then at the end of our process, other than future agenda items. We aren't lacking for future agenda items, just just so folks know that in terms of the way that we're having to balance our future agendas. If you have something that you feel is very pressing that needs to be happening within a short term, then by all means, let's address it, or at least if it isn't, then a placeholder for it. For downline. And Director Farmer, you're first, please.
Thank you. With regard to the report at the recent Finance Committee meeting on underfunded, under-resourced, and understaffed services, it was a really excellent report. I do first want to acknowledge the fact that Marvin Korn, who mainly made the report from that ad hoc committee, he acknowledged the hard work that the late Dwayne Lee made on this report. But I'm wondering if there is a point where we can make this an agenda item just to discuss their report and have Mr. Korn and also Mary Maher, the two remaining members of this committee, available for comment, for feedback, answering questions, and that type of thing. So I'm hoping that we can do that that can be a future agenda item. Also, and these aren't necessarily future agenda items, these are just things I'd like maybe Ray to address, our utilities manager, Mr. D'Enzo, to address perhaps next week or in the November. I know that the district, through Mr. D'Enzo, is having communication with Mr. Clyde Warren, and perhaps we can get some feedback on what that is. Maybe it's about water availability or whatever. It's something I think the public should be informed on, as well as the board. And also, with regard to what's going on with regard to the lease over at the flag lot and the piping that exists in that area west of San Simeon Creek Road. And if we intend to at some point use that piping for ocean outfall, for brine waste or anything like that, I think some kind of clarification as to what we're doing in this area is necessary, like I said, once again, for the board and the public. So, and also one more thing, and I know this has been, I've mentioned this in the past, if there is at some point, and I know Ray's going to give us some further information, if we could at some point, the board, have the opportunity to just have some brief communication with Mr. Gus Yates and Cindy Cleveland with regard to the work that they're doing regarding the in-stream flow study. Thank you.
Okay, let's see, that's four more. So, Vice President Howell.
Muted.
Sorry, I just do, I need to put a placeholder here. Although I don't think if it were an agenda item that it came up soon, I don't think it would take a lot of time. Just passing on the policy committee's recommendation that the CCSD have a policy regarding surveillance cameras. So the only question there is, should we or should we not? And what that should be, I don't think that was the issue, but it would be good if the board could address that, whether they feel that a policy is needed or not. Maybe if we have too short of a meeting somewhere, we can put that in.
Okay. Well, I would imagine in most cases, what you're talking about is security. So, I mean, security around our facilities, our plants and those kinds of things. And I don't know whether that's so much a policy as it is the kinds of things that fall out with security and insurance and that, but What we should do is probably have a quick discussion with GMY Gold on that to kind of understand what that is, and if necessary, bring it to the board. So are you saying that that's something that the policy committee is putting forward, that they want the board to make a decision on whether they should be directed on establishing something? Unfortunately, you're muted.
Sorry. Yeah, they're not going that far. All they really want to say is that we've made certain observations, having received a report from GMY Gold as to the placement of the cameras that we now have. And they're simply saying, we have these concerns. We feel that the board should consider having a surveillance policy regarding surveillance cameras. If the board wanted them to write a policy, I'm sure they'd be glad to do it, but that's not what they're saying.
They don't need to write a policy for us.
Offering to, but I, you know, that's not really, they're not, I'm just saying that they're not, it has nothing to do with what the policy should be, but that they do feel there should be a policy.
Okay. Director Dean.
These aren't immediate agenda items, but I would like, as soon as we is possible, and I know that our finance manager is very busy, but whenever Alex Handler gets his financial analysis done, I'd like to get that report so we know where we stand with our SST program. And I would like to just respond, if I can, to one question that Director Farmer had. When Mr. D'Enzo gives his report, or we rewatch that segment of the video of his presentation at the R&I committee, the answer to what is going on with Clyde Warren is included in that report. So he did mention Mr. Warren and what they were working on with him. So that answer is in that report. And then I did ask the general manager about the pedestrian bridge project, and I'm still confused about what our timeline was for completing the work above the creek. I do know that the work is not down directly in the creek, but if we can get an update later on of what is going on with the pipeline that's going over the creek and how long it's going to take to get that change, I'd appreciate it. But like I said, they're not like, doesn't have to be on the agenda next week. It's whenever this information's available. Thanks.
Okay. And I believe also the questions about what Gus Yates and Cindy Cleveland are doing in terms of the supportive activity for the in-stream flow study, the task two, or that's all part of that same presentation.
It was very, very well described. Yeah.
Right. So Director Farmer, you may want to take a look at that Zoom meeting and perhaps get some answers to the questions that you're posing.
I did watch the meeting. Thank you.
No, let's not do that. Don't go there. Don't go there.
All right. So if there isn't anything else, then I think we're in a position of being able to adjourn our meeting unless there's I don't see anything. All right. Adjourn the meeting, no extension. We accomplished all of our business. Congratulations to you all.
Congratulations.
And all of us. And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Griffin. And I hope everyone has an enjoyable rest of the meeting evening, and you're going to have an opportunity to watch the ball game.
Yes.
Should you choose. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy the weather.
Bye.
Thank you.